We're going to talk about what IRs, impulse responses, actually are. We're going to explain what they can do and what they can't do because there are limits to them. We're going to explain why people are using them. And that's what this episode will be about. This is the Self-Recording Band Podcast, the show where we help you make exciting records on your own, wherever you are, DIY style. Let's go. Hello and welcome to the Self-Recording Band Podcast. I am your host, Benedikt Hein, and I'm here with my friend and co-host, Malcolm Owen Flood. How are you, Malcolm?
Hello, I'm great. We had like the most amazing weather over on Vancouver Island here this weekend. It was like not wearing a jacket in the sun kind of stuff. It was awesome.
Holy
the best
shit.
February day you can imagine. Great.
Yeah, it's been a couple of warm days here as well, but rainy and warm. Mm. And now temperature is dropping rapidly, like fast.
It's, right.
At the end of the week, we are supposed to have, I always don't know with Celsius and Fahrenheit, but I think minus degrees are the same, aren't they? I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
Like we were supposed to have minus 15 or minus 18 or whatever, which is pretty cold. And yep. Yeah, but the last couple of days have been warm, but not nice and warm. Dirty and warm.
Yeah, there was actually like a weather warning on the forecast because it was so sunny. They were like trying to remind people that it's still winter and they should be ready for it, you know? Like, it's like, don't just start like wearing flip-flops around because there's going to be a snowstorm all of a sudden.
That's crazy. That's amazing. Like, you have crazy weather.
We do.
In general, right? Like, it's all over the place, I feel like.
It definitely is. It definitely is. But I'll take it. I'm stoked when it's like this. It's great.
Yeah. As I said, like, it's totally the opposite of what I have in my head when I think of Canada. Like, it's...
Right.
Canada is like Alaska or, I don't know, it's like, for me, it's always winter, always cold. And, yeah.
I mean, it's close to Alaska. We're not that far.
Yeah.
it's amazing. But, this is pretty unique for Canada. Most of it's freaking a hellscape right now, honestly. Yeah. We're lucky here. But in music-related stuff that our audience might actually care about, I have finally landed on an amp sim that I'm utterly in love with.
And can't wait to hear.
For anybody that's listened to this, I've been just like a diehard Kemper user for a long time now. I still am. I still love it a lot. But I finally tried out Neural's Nolly plugin, Neural DSP's Nolly plugin, and it's so awesome. It's incredible. It sounds great. It's got like massive low end and low mids, which is where I think a lot of plugs do not come through. And like how the low end distorts is like real sounding and feels good as well. Maybe not real, but it sounds awesome. Like I don't care if it's like an amp or not at that point. It's just an incredible feeling. I feel so bad because we're really good friends with Stephen Ward, who's their content creator and content manager over there. And we were in a mastermind group with him for years, and I just never tried one out because I was like, I got a Kemper, not interested. And like years later, I finally tried it out and I'm like, oh wow, this is fantastic and going to save me a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have the Nolly one. I demoed it and I liked it, but I'm a big Neural fanboy nonetheless. And I like the Nameless. I use it all the time, and the Granifier, like the Omega.
I did use the Granifier one in a mix recently as well, and it was definitely great.
Yeah, I just love that plugin. But the Nolly one is great as well. Nolly's one, if I remember correctly, had great cleans and crunch tones as well, not just the super high gain stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's really versatile, which is why I wasn't really interested, because it's quicker for me to, like, I just know my Kemper really well, and I know where I'm going to be looking and stuff like that. Where, like, a lot of amp sims are like, this is a metal shreddy thing, and I'm like, wow, that is... like only going to be useful once in a blue moon for me. So having like a versatile thing, I can quickly just bam, bam, bam. We're ready to keep moving. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think people underestimate what the Neural plugins can do. They are, the people always think it's a metal only thing, but most of them are pretty versatile actually.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think that's definitely their marketing points to those folks. But I mean, I rarely do any metal, so it's definitely a good fit.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the dark side. Now you're gonna.
Thank you.
Now you're gonna hopefully explore more, or maybe explore more, because there's so much more in the world of amp sims. It's incredible.
Can we quickly riff on why I'm so in love with the workflow now, actually, because I think it's relevant for our audience.
Yes, absolutely.
Even if that's not strictly what this episode's going to be about. But the reason I got onto it is because I'm working with an artist. Shout out to Jesse Junk. And he's going DIY recording for some of it. And I used to record his band, so this is kind of a new thing for him. And I've been making suggestions. I'm like, okay, try out this like drum program, grab some MIDI bass, and grab a good amp sim. And like, we're going to be able to do this remotely and like send files back and forth really easily kind of thing. And you don't have to worry about learning to engineer guitar amps and drum kits and stuff like that. And that's been going great. So anyways, he was sending me DIs and I was like, okay, well, I'll load up an amp sim rather than like, I'm not going to reamp while I'm just checking out the files to see if they're good. So I just grabbed Nolly and I was like, okay, this is so incredible. And then from there, we ended up actually tracking the song together in the end. And while using it in the studio, it's also quicker. I love miking up amps and stuff like that, but like when we're just trying to track guitars as much as we can in one day, just being able to throw that up and choose something was so valuable. Just be like, okay, this track has our clean tone, this one has our dirty tone. I'm copying it around to different tracks all over the place. We don't have to like set up different amps and then be like, oh, we need that clean tone back. Let's go find that again. Yeah, massive workflow changer. And editing DIs is so awesome.
Yes.
I mean, I always used DIs to edit, but I was editing them with a live amp track almost always, right? Or Kemper, but like essentially a recorded amp sound. And you can't be as abusive to an amp sound as you can to a DI, right?
Yes.
Like you can't, like I wouldn't ever really suggest time stretching an amp sound because it generally sounds really, really bad. But a DI, it's like, there's almost no limit to how far you can push it.
Yes, totally.
It's weird. It's just like such a simpler harmonic material for it to deal with, and then you throw it through an amp, it sounds great again. I don't know.
Absolutely.
So I'm really loving that. It's a game changer. If you're recording yourselves, you're really not giving yourselves an advantage if you're not recording a DI.
Absolutely. Like same with tuning. If you can't really tune chords, but like for leads, for example, sometimes someone just bends a little too much, or like if there's single notes, if you only have the amp sound, you can almost not tune it. It will always sound weird. But if you tune the DI and then reamp it, you won't notice basically most of the time. So
yeah, definitely.
But that's the only thing where I feel that higher sample rates make sense, because I'm usually like a 48 type of guy. I don't record anything above 48 usually, because I don't see the benefit in it. And I've made endless tests, and like people are still debating on this, but I kind of settled on like 48 kilohertz. Mm-hmm. And we won't get into that now. But the only situation where I really found that it's beneficial to have higher sample rates is when you know you're going to stretch things a lot. Then
right.
That's where it really helps to have those like more steps. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's the only thing.
You need to create samples essentially by stretching it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the only thing where I really found it to be beneficial. But anyway, yeah, I totally agree. And the amp sim thing is just, yeah, a workflow game changer. Absolutely. That's also the reason why I said it in the workflow episode, which was right. Two episodes ago, I think. But,
yeah.
Why I like to, even if I record amps, why I like to track through the computer and then out and then into the amp, because being able to just say, hey, I think a delay would be cool in this part. Let's just use some plugin or whatever and play through that into the amp. It's just such a creative, fun process versus like having to find the right pedal and patching it in and then getting rid of it again once you don't need it anymore. And like having a DI ready and being able to just manipulate it as you go is awesome. And that's the same thing with amp sims, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess like there's a reason this is becoming almost the standard way of approaching guitar recording these days. And that is our segue into today's episode, I think, is like modern guitar recording techniques that are really becoming the norm. And trying to understand what those techniques are and why they're beneficial and how we use them.
Yeah, exactly. And more specifically, it's not about amp sims so much. It's about IRs, impulse responses, because I think it also came up in the Facebook community once. And that's where we got the idea for this episode from. And it's really relevant because especially IRs are becoming the standard, more so even than MPSIMs, because even people using their real tube amps start using IRs more often now. And many people don't mic caps anymore for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, we're going to talk about what IRs, impulse responses, actually are. And we're going to try and explain it in a way that's easy to understand so we don't get into the technical details as much. We're going to explain what they can do and what they can't do because there are limits to them. We're going to explain why people are using them and why it might be an interesting thing to try if you haven't yet. Mm-hmm. We're also going to talk about different use cases of IRs a little bit. So they are not just used when it comes to guitar recording, but they can do more than that. And we're going to tell you how to actually do it. So that's what this episode will be about. And yeah, let's maybe start with explaining what an IR actually is, what this impulse response that we're talking about, what this actually is.
So, I'm going to let you take it away because you are 100% more experienced with IRs than I am.
Okay, I'll do my best. So the way I understand it, and as I said, I could try and explain it in a more technical way, but I won't do it on purpose. So I will try and explain it in a way that makes sense to as many of the listeners as possible. An impulse response is a snapshot of a room or a cabinet or a piece of gear that can be used later in the DAW, basically. So you grab it, you record a moment in time, a snapshot, like a signal that you run through a piece of gear or into a room. You record that, and then you can load it up in an IR loader or convolution reverb plugin, and whatever you send through that plugin will have the frequency response of the thing, the frequency response and the time information of the thing that you captured. So what that means is a simple example. You go into a room, you put a speaker in the room, you send out a very short blip of white noise, for example, into that room, and you capture it with microphones. And that you capture the direct signal and you capture the room response, like the reverb of the room. Mm-hmm. And then you cut that WAV file in a way that you cut away the direct part of it, like the first signal, like the original blip out of the speaker. You cut that away so you're only left with the room information. And then you make it as long as you want it to be so that you hear all of the decay. And then you load that WAV file in a convolution reverb. Like you can, there's various steps to this. You can make an IR. I don't know how that works with some other tool, but most convolution reverbs just let you load up WAV files, like these snapshots that you recorded, and they will convert it into whatever format it needs to be. And you just load up the WAV file, and then when you send something through that convolution reverb, it will sound as if you had it recorded in that room. Obviously, that response is going to depend on the signal that you send into the room, the position of the speaker, the characteristics of the speaker. So you can play around with that. But basically, you try to capture how the room reacts to that impulse. That's why it's called an impulse response. Like you capture the response of the room to that impulse so that you can use that later as a reverb in the DAW. That's one example. Same thing and more simple to do because there's less things to consider is capturing an impulse response of a cap, of a speaker cabinet. And that's what we're talking about mainly in this episode. So you set up an amplifier and a cabinet. And if you want to capture the cabinet, the behavior of the cabinet alone, you want to have like some sort of clean amplifier that doesn't color whatever you send through it. And then you want to send a signal through this cap and you mic it up and you record that impulse through the cap. And you do the same thing that I just described. You basically just capturing the frequency response off that cap, the decay and all that won't matter as much. It's just about the frequency response. And then you can have that information as a virtual cap, basically. Mm. There's more to it than that, but that's basically how it works. You record a snapshot off a cap, and then you can load it as a virtual cap later. And if you don't create or want to create your IRs yourself, because that's harder to do than I just tried to describe it, You don't have to. There's plenty of IRs of all sorts of cabinets out there in the world. You can just buy or like get free packs or whatever. You can buy all sorts of cabs and mic combinations and whatnot and just try that out and with your amp sims or your real amps. And the beauty of that is that if the person who made those IRs, if that person knew what they were doing, then you got a really, really great chain and a great mic position and a great cab and like ideal conditions that you can just use with your amp sim or your amp, and you don't need to worry about choosing the right mic, finding the right position, getting the room right and all that. You just need to dial in your amp and the rest of the chain is already there. And you can just switch between different IRs if you want to try a different mic or if you want to try a different cab. You have access to all these different recording chains basically that you just load up and send your amp through. And that's a very flexible and also a very foolproof and high-quality way to record guitars. Mm. The only caveat here is that some people, of course, make IRs and they don't know what they're doing. So some IRs are just crap, just as like real recordings are crap. Like if they use a shitty mic in a shitty position with a shitty cab, like the IR will sound shitty. So yeah, there's still that. But if you go to a couple of places that are known for making great IRs and buy from them, you'll get a variety of great recording chains, basically. Hey friend, this is Benedict from the selfrecordingband.com, and if you are producing your own songs, I have a question for you. Do you ever listen to your music and feel like something is just off? Maybe the drums sound weak, or the guitar tone bothers you, maybe the vocals don't really cut through the mix, or the whole thing just doesn't sound finished and professional, but you can't really put your finger on it? I know you want to release big, punchy, professional sounding songs, right? The type of authentic, unique art that connects with your audience on a deep level. But you're just not sure what's missing with your recordings. Somehow you just can't connect all the dots. And I get it, the amount of things to learn and all the conflicting information out there can be really overwhelming. Especially if you're a lone wolf trying to figure it all out on your own, right? Now here's the good news. Whether you've been self-recording for years or you're just setting up your first home studio, I want to offer you my personal one-on-one help. As long as you are determined to put in the work, I'm offering a limited amount of free one-on-one coaching calls with me. On this hour-long call, we'll dive deep into your recordings and create a personalized roadmap for you to finally solve the issues you're struggling with, so that you can release music that you'll be proud of forever. If you are ready to see and believe that it's actually possible to achieve your goals and make the records you've always wanted to make, then go to theselfrecordingband.com/call and apply for one of my limited coaching spots. I can assure you that making exciting and successful DIY records is very doable. We've done it, lots of other people have done it, you can do it as well. Talk soon, theselfrecordingband.com/call.
Right. Yeah. And if you've used amp sims before, you've probably already been using IRs without realizing. You're just using the IR that is built into that amp sim. But a lot of these amp sims have the option of loading in your own IRs. So you can just go into the little cabinet section of that amp sim and then select from your own folder base the ones you want to try out using. And Benny, you actually are the one that like really put me onto this, but changing the speaker or cabinet is like a massive part of a guitar sound.
Yep.
Like sometimes I'm like, this is bigger than the head.
Yep.
Like what it does. It's incredible.
Yeah. I did a pretty big shootout when I was doing a video for the course, the part that's about making guitar cabinets. And I tried out different mic positions. I tried out different IRs and I put them back to back in the video so you can hear the differences, like the same amp, the same settings, but like different mics in different positions and then a couple of IRs. And it's like 10 different guitar amps. It's like 10 different guitar sounds. But the only difference is the position of the mic or the cab or like a different impulse, but it's completely different. Like everything's different. Right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So yeah, the cab is such a big thing. Actually, like I don't know if I've told this story before, but with my band, when we practiced the first time, like the newer band that I'm in, our guitar player set up his JCM 800 and he started playing and I'm like, dude, you gotta need like your amp needs to be serviced. Like that's, I'm pretty sure it's broken. Like it sounded so awful. And he's like, really? I don't think so. And I'm like, yeah, it does. It just doesn't sound right. And then I saw the cab that he was using, and it was totally the cab. It was like a cheap 2x12, that like the cheapest one you can get in Germany, basically. And he just bought that for practice purposes. And it sounded so weird and so shitty. It was like a small radio or something. Like it had no low end at all. It had an annoying top end. It just was not usable for anything. But the amp was fine. It was just the cab. But I really thought the amp was broken. Like that's the difference a cab can make.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a JCM 800 sitting right beside me, actually. It's like the 1x12 80s combo version. So it's got the same circuit as like the, I think it's the 2204. It's like the most sought after 800 circuit around. And when I first plugged it in, I was like, this is like listening to Ice Picks. Like, well, how are these popular? And then I plugged it into a cabinet and I was like, I get it.
Yeah.
These are incredible. This is a great amp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So... this whole concept of creating your or refining your amp tone by changing cabs and mic positions and everything, it's a really important thing to understand, because you can, it's much more powerful sometimes than just using the EQ on the amp or using a different amp sometimes even. So, But when we talk about IRs, there's one thing I want to add here, because we need to tell people what IRs can and can't do. So they can capture the frequency response of a cab or a room or some gear or whatever. They can capture the decay, so the echo and the reverb, but they can't capture distortion characteristics, dynamics, and all that stuff. So it's like a static snapshot, and it won't change if you send more level into it. It won't distort it. Like, it's only frequency and time, basically.
Mm.
And so that's important to understand, because you can make IRs of pieces of gear as well. Like an IR is always the whole chain, so you can sense an impulse through whatever and record it, and you have an IR. But it will only work with the frequency and the time domain, but not with like dynamics and distortion and stuff.
Right.
So that's just important. And that's the difference. And that's why an IR will never exactly sound the same as the cab, because the speaker also distorts, and the more level you send into it, it starts to compress, and it does all sorts of things dynamically that an IR doesn't. If you want to have those options, you would need an IR that's taken at a very high level versus one that's like at a low level, or I don't know. Right. I don't want to get into the technical details, but just know that you're not going to get the same behavior that you'll get from a cab if you drive it harder, for example.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. But in most cases, that's not necessary anyway. And the reason why IRs are popular, why you would want to do that, even if it can do less, compared to a real cab, is, first of all, it's super convenient. As we said, you can just easily swap cabinets and try different mics, mic combinations and all that. You have access to world-class recording chains, mics that are perfectly in phase, all that stuff in good rooms and all that. So super convenient, super flexible. It's intuitive to use, like in the sense that depending on what packs you get, they are labeled in a way that you can just grab a brighter one or a darker one, or you grab a certain cab and you just flip through them like presets and just see what you like. It's a lower risk of making mistakes, because if they are made properly, you don't run into like phase problems with various mics and all that. Or room problems. And then, of course, you can use your real amps quietly at home, for example, with IRs. That's also a big reason why people are using IRs more and more, because some people have their amps because they are in a band or whatever, but they cannot record the thing with a microphone and a cab because it's just super loud when they're at home and they can't use that. But if you use a load box, so it's like a load that you plug into the speaker output of your amp, and that kind of, so the amp sees a cab that's not there, it sees the load. So you can use your amp without a cab, without damaging it. And then you record a signal out of that load box and use it with an IR. And so you can have your amp next to you and dial it in and like drive it really hard with like headphones. And that's a very cool thing that I enjoy doing a lot, actually. And if you have a reactive load, then it even, like, you even get some of that behavior of a cab,
right,
because it reacts to the output signal of the amp dynamically. So that is really great. And it's a great way to use your real amp if you're not really digging amp sims, or if you have an amp that you really love. And I just made a record using a 5150 block ladder and the JCM 800, which are great amps. But I'm not sure if I'm going to use the cap that I recorded. Maybe I just go with an impulse. I don't know.
Right. So in that case, you mic'd up the cab live, but you also ran into a load box.
I also grabbed the... not yet. I also grabbed the DI, but I have them next to me and I might run it through it again, but then instead use an IR. And I want to just compare it to whatever, to the chain that I had, just to see what works better, because I'm happy with the amp tone. I'm not so sure about the cap tone. I mean, I like it, but workflow was everything and I didn't want to take too long getting guitar tone. So I like what we recorded, but I think I could do more if I took the time without the band being there. So maybe I'm going to go with an IR. Maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah.
But just having this option is so great. And that's another reason for why people are using IRs more and more, because people record at home. And it's just an easier, faster way to get great recordings. And you can do it without being loud.
Yeah. So I really like this solution, because it used to be that the solution for recording at home was getting like an attenuator and just making your amp quiet. But that's really not the same as having an amp loud. It's definitely a solution, but this really just solves the problem entirely. So you can still have your amp running as hot as it's meant to be and get a really professional result. So great solution if you're in an apartment or something where you really can't make much noise at all, definitely.
Totally.
Now, there's a lot of these on the market all of a sudden. Like, I know that UAD, or I guess just UA, came out with the Oxbox. There's like the two-note torpedo stuff. Which one did you have?
I really like the Sur reactive load.
Oh, yeah.
S-U-H-R. I haven't done this too much with the real amp thing, to be honest. I more often than not, I use IRs with amp sims. But I'm debating on trying, like, I'm going to try a couple of different ones and form a more informed, like, opinion on this. So I can't really recommend one box now. I really like the Oxbox when I heard it. I like the Sur reactive load a lot, but I'm not sure if there is anything out there that's even better. Maybe the two note stuff is awesome, I guess. I think it's the same as always. There are a couple of pieces that I see people use all the time, and you can be pretty sure that all of those work. So if well-known producers and people who record great stuff use a couple of pieces, and the Oxbox, the Sur, and the two-note stuff are examples for this, if those people use them a lot, you can be pretty sure that they work. So I don't know. Get one of these, see if you like it, maybe compare two or three, but I'm pretty sure they all do the job. So, but I like the concept of a reactive load, especially. So, but I guess they all are these days. So, yeah.
Very popular unit, though, for sure.
Yeah. So, no real recommendation here, but those three, I guess, would work. And there are different versions of it, because the thing is, it's more, for me, it's more about the features. There are load boxes that are just load boxes, and you just record the signal without a cap into the computer, and then you use an IR loader in the computer. That's my preferred way to do it. So the Sur reactive load without the built-in IR loader is all I need. It's cheap, it works great, it sounds great, and then I do everything else in the computer. But some people swear by boxes like the Oxbox, for example, where you choose the IR on the device itself, or you use the two-note stuff that has... I think there's also different versions of it. I'm not really sure. I'm sure there's one. And for the Sur thing, it's the same, where you just capture the amp, and then there's one with a built-in IR loader, where you can like, connect the thing to your computer, load an IR, record straight through it. I don't know why. I just prefer to run it through a plugin and do it in the computer. But,
well, it gives you the option of changing it after, right? You can just swap the IR in the mix at that point, right? Because if you're recording with the built-in one, you're actually printing that, I would assume.
Yes, exactly. That's one part of it. Then the other part of it, I just like tweaking stuff on a screen more than I like to deal with like small displays and like knobs and fiddle around with choosing an IR. And like I just like to do it in the DAW. And then, and I'll get to that later when we talk about recommendations, I discovered a incredible plugin that I like to use more than anything. That gives me a lot more flexibility and features than just loading up an IR in a device like that. So that's the reason why I just prefer to capture the line out, basically, and then do it with a plugin. But you can do whatever you want. It's the same thing.
Yeah. See, I would assume most of our audience prefers to turn knobs on a device rather than in the computer, right? Because like if you're an app guy, you're like used to dealing with a physical object, then obviously that's going to feel more familiar. But do keep in mind.
And you can record both. I just wanted to say that if you have one of those built-in IR loaders, that doesn't mean you don't have the flexibility, because I think with all of them, you can record the IR signal, and then you can also record the one without an IR so that you can change it later. So in that case, it's fun to play through the actual IR and not having to deal with a plugin. But if you chose the wrong one, you can still change it. I just don't use, or I wouldn't buy a box like that, because I don't need the built-in IR loader, and the ones without are just cheaper.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. And as you've suggested to me, even if you're using like a modeler, like a Kemper or a Axvex or whatever, there's IRs in those, I guess, but as you recommended to me, that's not their strong suit. So you can actually like turn off the cab while you record out of those, and then use an IR loader to replace the cabinet options inside of your DAW as well, which is something I'm definitely going to be experimenting with more here.
Definitely. That's one of the big benefits, is that even old amp sims, and I mean, the Kemper gets updated and gets new software, but the device itself is also like 10 years old at this point or something, or 8 years, old. I don't know. And some plugins are old, or if you're using a pod or whatever, like old school, almost, if that's a word, old school amp sim. But some of these don't sound as bad as you would think if you turn off the cab and use a proper IR. It's really oftentimes the IR. I had this, I've told it before on the podcast, I think, I had this client where they sent me guitar tones that I really liked, and I asked them what they were using, which amp, which chain. Turns out they were using a pod, like the original one, the OG pod from like 15 years ago or so. Like, and I have no way, that can't be a pod. It sounds incredible. Turns out they used it with like good IRs, and it was a really fantastic guitar tone that I used on the record. So even old or crappy or cheap sounding amp sims can be improved drastically with proper IRs.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I've recorded one of those Line 6 pods in my early internship days, and it was like not enjoyable.
Exactly. But yeah, there's a lot you can do. And even the modern plugins, that's not their strong suit, as you said. And like with the Kemper, I always had this issue, no matter what I used, which preset or profile or whatever, it always felt like there was this layer of fizz on everything. It sounded like the real amp with an added fizz. Like, I just couldn't get rid of it until I figured out that if I turn the cab off and use an IR, then I started to like it. So, yeah. Cool. So, yeah. Those are the benefits of using it. Yeah. The thing is, it really depends. Like, you still got to have taste. That's what I think I want to say. So, it's easy, and it gives you all the benefits that we were talking about, but you still need to listen for the exact same things that you would need to listen for when you mic up a cab or when you place the virtual mic on an amp sim or whatever. So you swap through these presets or snapshots, but it really depends on the person making them, and then it depends on you and your taste when it comes to picking the right one. So how to use an IR properly is basically, first of all, you need an IR loader plugin. Can be a stock plugin in your DAW. Like, I think Logic has one, Cubase has one, but there are free ones out there as well. I think the STL NAD IR, it's called, NAD IR, NAD IR, I don't know. That's a really awesome IR loader that's free. It lets you load up two different IRs simultaneously, and you can blend between them. You can run it mono or stereo. So it gives you all you need, basically. It's free by STL Tones and Ignite Amps, I think. It's a collaboration between those. So that's an example of a great IR loader. You can use a convolution reverb plugin to do the same thing, like the stock plugins in Logic or Cubase. Those are convolution reverb plugins meant to deal with room impulses, but you can load up a cab impulse as well. If you use one of those, you have more options to tweak it. You have an EQ in there sometimes. You can like make it shorter or longer if you have like room information in there or whatever. So first of all, pick an IR loader, and then pick the right IR, and then tweak it if necessary. And what I mean by that is sometimes the same thing as with a real recording chain, sometimes it sounds right, but it's a little dark or it's a little bright, or sometimes there are resonances that you don't like, just as with a real recording chain. So you might want to tweak it if necessary. Sometimes, especially when you have like room impulses, or if the impulse includes some reverb or delay, because that works as well, you can shorten the decay in the plugin. So you can use a certain reverb, but if it's too long, you can just make it shorter. You can tweak whatever you want to do with it. You can tweak it until it fits your needs. And that's it. But be careful not to use it as a preset and just leave it that way. You might need to try a couple of different ones, and then you might need to tweak it, because it all still comes down to your taste and to the context of the song.
Yeah, it definitely, one of the huge advantages is that it's so easy to swap out the cab, right? You can just click on a bunch of different ones and compare them. And because you can do that so quickly and in real time, just do it with the song playing, right? So you're listening in context rather than to just the guitar. So have like whoever play along to the song, or maybe you've already recorded a DI, so it's just, you can just click play and then cycle through as you're listening to how it fits into the rest of the instruments.
Yes, totally. So when in a real like recording situation with mics on a cabinet where you would move the mic if it's not right yet, you would just swap out the IR, try a different one, and find the best sound that way. But you still need to do that tweaking, sort of. And with most packs, they give you the same cabinet and the same mic, but in different positions. So you can have like a couple of brighter ones, darker ones, and you just cycle through them until you find the one that works, just like moving a mic, basically. Mm-hmm. And then there are things like, besides the classic IR loaders, where you just load it up and switch to a different one if you don't like it, there are new special plugins, like the one that I'm absolutely in love with right now. It's called Miko, M-I-K-K-O. And I would absolutely recommend trying this out. It's by ML Labs, I think it's the company called.
Okay. I was just going to ask, because if you type in Miko, you get an Edmonton Oilers hockey player. ML Sound Lab, that's the one.
If you Google Miko IR or Miko Player or whatever it's called, ML Sound Lab is the company, and Miko, M-I-K-K-O, is the plugin. It's insane. It's a CAPSIM plugin that, like, it looks like a speaker, and you can add up to, I don't know how many mics, like 10, 20, I don't know, an insane amount of mics. You just click add new mic, and you can combine as many mics as you want. You can put them in the right spot on the speaker, and you can place them 360 around the speaker, so you can really find the sweet spot on the speaker. Because a speaker will sound different on one side compared to the other side. And just like with a real cab, you can move that mic, and then you can add another one and another one, and you can angle them, I think. You can change the distance. You can choose different mic types, different cabs. And in the background, it's loading IRs in real time as you tweak, and you always end up with an IR, a snapshot of whatever you just did there. I don't know how it works in the background, but it's IR-based. But you tweak it, and they switch mic positions just like you would with a real cab. And then when you found a position that works, and you even see the frequency response next to it, there's a graph that shows you the frequency response. It shows you the resonances and the peaks and valleys and all that. And once you found a spot that you really like, a mic positioning that you really liked, then you can export it as an IR even and save it. So you can just load it up in a different plugin later, or give it to a friend or whatever. You can like save and export your own IRs using that plugin. And like the phase relationship between the mics is always ideal. It's a crazy cool plugin. It just sounds amazing. You can buy all sorts of different cabs, and you have all the different mics available. And it's just a convolution IR loader on steroids. And I just love it. And there's a free version of it that can get you pretty far already. So
cool. When did you get into this one? I've never heard of it before. So
I saw George Lever use it. And I really like his work. And I thought, if he uses it, might be cool. And then I just checked it out, and it's pretty new, I think. So I don't think it's out there for a long time.
Right.
And I just tried it, and I really, really like it.
Yeah. Shout out to George. You're a genius, man.
Yes. So yeah, everyone try that out. It's a really awesome CAPSIM that I really love. And that plugin is the main reason why I don't like built-in IRs anymore in like load boxes, because I just want to tweak with that thing.
It's just better.
It's just better for me. Yeah, and more flexible. And like it's like the workflow when you position a real mic, and I just know how to do that, and I do that in the computer now with that thing.
Right.
But it's not like a weird algorithm that sounds sort of like a cab, because things like that used to exist for years now, where you place a virtual mic on a cab. But many of those are just algorithms and filter curves that sort of sound like an amp and a cab, like a cab and a mic, but not really. But this plugin is just different. This really sounds like a cab. So I don't know how they do it in the background, and I don't really care. But if I find a position and export the IR, it just sounds like exactly like I want it to sound.
Very cool. Okay, so maybe you already answered this, so sorry, but quick question. Are you able to like load in your usual IRs to this, or is it using like a proprietary IR structure?
I'm not sure. You can load something. I'm not sure if you can load plugins, like presets, or if you can load IRs. Okay. But you can use their IRs, and you can export them as an IR. I need to play around with that more. Yeah, that's all I can say for now. But it's a little more than the traditional IR thing, but I just love it.
Cool. So awesome. I'm definitely going to try that out, man.
Yeah.
I love new gear suggestions.
Yes. Yeah. And now one more important thing that I want to tell people is whenever you want to use IRs that are not just a very short snapshot, like a dry IR, when you want to use room mics, for example, or like IRs of room mics or reverbs or echoes or anything like that that has a decay, the IR loader choice is very important, because some IR loaders, especially the ones designed to only load like guitar cab IRs, they only allow the impulses, the wave files, to be a certain length. So some of them only allow, I don't know, half a second or whatever, but if you want to have a second long decay, it just cuts off the impulse and it doesn't work. So you got to be careful with that, because there are really cool room IRs out there that you can combine the dry ones with the room mics, just as like in real life. And there are impulses like the ones that I told Malcolm before we started recording this episode that I have a big collection of IRs of like effects gear, Lexicon reverbs, spring reverbs, echo boxes, all those things, and then famous rooms as well. And if I load those into a loader that like has this length limit, then it just doesn't load properly. It just cuts off the beautiful decay. So you got to be careful with that. Yeah.
That is good advice.
Yes. Yeah. Other than that, I don't know what else to say.
I mean, that's a pretty good start. That's they're totally worth trying seeing if it's like a good workflow for you. I would assume it's a good workflow for most of our listeners, because it's just easier.
Yeah.
It's easier than micing up an app. And amps are tricky, because recording an amp in the same room as you is not a good way to record. You can't hear anything. You have to like play and then stop and listen back to tell if you're actually capturing anything good. So avoiding micing up an amp unless you have a separate isolation booth or a room is pretty essential. So this is like the perfect workaround to that.
Totally. Totally. It can be used so creatively once you dive into that, also with making your own IRs. And even if it's not perfect in the beginning, it's just fun. Like the first time I did it completely wrong, but it was just fun. I just went into a room, I clapped, recorded it, cut the clap off, and then loaded up the WAV file, and it worked. It was not a linear, not the real response of the room, because I clapped and I didn't use white noise or whatever you would want to use. But still, it's just so fun to hit play and then hear the reverb of the room that you were just in. So it's like and same with cab IRs. It's just a fun, creative thing to do, and a great workaround, as you said, and a great solution, even if you're recording at home. I guess the most helpful thing to do would be if I put all like the common or like the good plugins that I know of and the IR loaders that I know of in the show notes, just so people can find them and try them out. And I might even add some IR packs that I know are for free, because there are some of them have been around for a couple of years that are just great and like proven to work. So I might just link to those as well. So you have a starting point. You just go to theselfrecordingband.com/52. Then you will be at the show notes page for this episode, and there will be links for plugins as well as IR packs. And then you can quickly and easily start using those before you dive into the whole world and find your own stuff. But I guess I'll just do that as a starting point.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. last thing I would say is people that are confused. I remember being confused about recording DIs for bass because I thought it sounded pretty lame. Now I'm kind of more into it. I think DIs can sound really cool. You know, like I think maybe I like mid-range more than I used to. But there's a lot of people that use IRs in conjunction with DIs. They'll get a DI and then they'll craft like an amp sound from that DI in mixing. And it can be really crazy cool. So maybe this is the answer to your bass woos if you're struggling with that.
Oh yeah, that too. Absolutely. And I don't want to end this episode before mentioning one person, and that is in our community, in the self-recording band Facebook community, we have a member, Thomas Bommel-Weishäupel is his full name. I'm sure he will he's in there. You will find him. He's an expert on making IRs, using IRs, and all the technical details behind it all. So he knows much more about it than I do. And he's made an IR pack for Two Notes. So there is his own signature pack, or two of them, actually, I think. And
very cool.
He's like really, everything I explained wrong probably in this episode, he knows how to explain correctly. And he knows how all that stuff works technically. So if you have any follow-up questions, and post it in the group, I'm pretty sure he will be happy to answer and help. And I'm also, just because he's a member of the community and has been helpful a lot of times, an active member actually, and has answered a couple of questions already, I'm just going to link to his packs as well in the show notes. And the fun thing about his packs is that it's a very special, unusual thing that he did, because his IRs have been recorded in an anechoic, I don't know what the word is, chamber. So...
Right. What is that word? I was like, no, anecdotal. Nope, that's not right.
anechoic chamber, I think it's called. It's a room that has no room information, basically. No reflections at all. It's the most dead, linear sounding room that can possibly exist. There are only a few of them in the world, or at least like here in Europe. He went to some university, rented out the room, I think, and then captured the IRs in there because he didn't want to have any sort of room information in his IRs. And the cool thing about those are they don't sound like typical IRs, but they are fun and really creative. You can use them creatively, because the fun thing, if I understand correctly, is that he was able to capture IRs from a distance, but without the room messing up what's coming out of the amp. So he wanted to recreate how an amp feels like if you stand in front of it, but without whatever messy room it is in. So he could put the microphone a couple of feet away from the amp and record it from a distance without the proximity effect and all of that, but without reflections. So it's still a very dry, direct signal, but without the proximity. So that's something, I don't know if anyone's ever done that, and Two Notes released it. So if you want to check that out, that's a really special IR pack and really fun. And I'm sure he can explain it better, but to my understanding, that's what it is.
That's very cool. What a great idea.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I'm sure I get a message from him about what I explained wrong in this episode.
Yeah, be gentle with us, Thomas. We tried
our best, yeah. So bottom line, like, I'm a user of IRs and I love them because of the convenience and because of how they sound and all that. I'm not the guy making them, but I hope this was still helpful for you and it gives you a starting point and it... inspires you to start using those as well if you haven't already.
Definitely.
Cool. Anything you want to add, Malcolm?
I think that's, I'm mixing a song right after this, so I'm going to jump into this world and try out that Miko plugin.
Do it. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. Well, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thank you as always. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye, everyone. Hey friend, thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this one, just know that this is just a tiny fraction, a small taste of what we can actually do to help you completely transform your recordings and mixes forever. If you are really serious about your music, if you want to reach your goals as a self-recording artist, then please apply now for the Self-Recording Syndicate, our coaching program that takes you from where you are to being able to completely independently produce and release exciting sounding music forever. If you join that program, you're going to be part of a very, very passionate, dedicated, committed group of self-recording artists from all around the world. And you're going to get a roadmap, guidance, feedback, personal access to me and the team. We're going to do everything, literally everything we can to help you make the best recordings you can possibly make. And it all starts with a free first call, completely free, no strings attached. Best case scenario, we're going to end up working together and we're going to completely transform the way your music sounds. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an hour of free coaching and an action plan that you can then take and implement on your own. So if that sounds interesting to you, get started now with your first completely free call by going to theselfrecordingband.com/call or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.